Immigration pause goes nuclear. The scab covering Hillary's loss was ripped wide open as blood spurted from the tormented and battle-scarred leftists who rushed into battle. The terrifying apparition known as Donald John Trump, woozy from the shock of Trump fulfilling his promise to ban those from terrorist hotspots. The enraged leftists dipped into their bag of metaphor, invective, and dramatic overkill to blast back at Donald. Undoubtedly, Trump is unfazed, and yet in the midst of this, yet another Muslim murder spree in North America, as if right on cue up in Canada, and I think six people dead in that one. Muslims shooting Muslims at a mosque, yet the most in screaming Allah Akbar, yet the most ironic part of this battle to better filter world citizens seeking to relocate to America is that it was Obama's refusal to take seriously the need to protect us from illegals, both stateside and global, that set the stage for this, is it not? If the people's will had not been repeatedly subverted by an arrogant and scofflaw leader, we wouldn't be so furious. Further, if our so-called congressional leaders had not been so indifferent and inert, not to speak of which inept, we wouldn't feel now as if there must be more to come. The first week of Donald John Trump's presidency has been a doozy. What is most shocking is Trump appears to be trying to set a record for fulfilling the most campaign promises in the shortest amount of time. And so the left, while filled with apoplexy and fury, cannot claim they were not warned. Further, with Trump quoting in all his orders the standards of earlier leaders, is really tilling no new ground. How novel. And yet the Trump presidency occurred in the aftermath of Obama's failed presidency, his obstinate refusal to honor positive promises. But worse, the effect of his terrible decisions made these executive orders not only acceptable, but necessary. For example, in what universe does the most powerful and just nation in the world need to continually accept unvetted immigrants, especially those from war zones, jihad areas, and even more astounding, those from the opposite religion from what is practiced here? Stay tuned, sports fans. Good morning, 609 Kelly, and good morning to you. We've got an incredible backlash, a furious assault on the airwaves, and you know, you thought that it was bad before the reaction to Trump, and now we've got Chucky Schumer is literally getting up and crying over this thing. And it, you thought it was a Muslim ban. It isn't a Muslim ban, and it's so interesting that these folks would claim this is a Muslim ban. I mean, what's wrong with these people? That's a rhetorical question. They're complete idiots. But so, you know, here's the thing, and there's an article that I would direct you to from I'm trying to remember the name. I guess is it Commentary Magazine? I think it's something else, by John Podertz, The National Elite Nervous Breakdown. And this was written before this event, but the fact of the matter is, if this is going to be what it's like for the next 4 to 8 years, let's hopefully 8 years, the left, which has already terribly damaged itself, is going to, it is Commentary Magazine. It's going to run out of energy. It's going to run out of steam. I didn't pay attention to this. At first, it kind of caught me off guard. Oh my gosh, followed through on this Muslim ban, this, you know, but then I realized it, as always, is not what it is supposed to have been. it's just another overreaction. What happened is there are seven countries out there, my friends, seven countries that have been indicated as being jihad danger areas, or at least areas that are producing jihadists. And if there's a difference there. And so they went and took that list and basically made those people get extra checked before they come into the country. What is so terrible about that? Isn't that exactly what we needed? And yet the left goes ape crap and says over and over again, this is not the country of the founders. This is not who we are. And so there's this idea out there that we have to take the risk of getting blown to smithereens by these people just to prove to the world we're good guys. We've been there. We've done that. Germany has been there. It's done that. It doesn't work. And the left, or the Muslim radicals, are taking advantage of it. They're laughing their heads off. So anyway, here's something from Rince Priebus, the chief of staff, explaining why this was necessary. Is it not necessary that at some point we were going to have to do something like this? I mean, give me a break. Isn't that what? And here's the best part of this. Donald Trump is merely, he's merely fulfilling the promises that he made when he ran for office. How much more basic does it get? You know, there's local articles on what real democracy is. Real democracy, according to some local authors, is somebody gets elected into office and does whatever they want, which is, has nothing to do with democracy. Democracy is representative. Donald Trump ran on a certain number of promises. This is one of them. This is democracy.
Yesterday, what people need to understand is that 325,000 foreign travelers came into the United States. About 109 of those people were detained for further questioning because they came from the identified seven countries. They were asked questions. The vast majority of all those people were released. About a couple dozen people remained for further questioning. And my suspicion is those people will move on as long as they're not dangerous. And it's perhaps a couple of them will be further detained because it's determined that they're dangerous for this country. This is not a Muslim ban, John. This is identifying the seven countries. And the reason we chose those seven countries was those were the seven countries that both the Congress and the Obama administration identified as being the seven countries that were most identifiable with dangerous terrorism taking place in their country. Now, you can point to other countries that have similar problems, like Pakistan and others. Perhaps we need to take it further. But for now, immediate steps, right, pulling the Band-Aid off, is to do further vetting for people traveling in and out of those countries. If you're a person that has a green card for whatever reason from Yemen, and you're coming back and forth to Yemen in the JFK, I think it's reasonable to expect that a Customs and Border Patrol agent is going to have a few more questions for you to wonder why in the world, you know, you keep coming back and forth from Yemen. Now, maybe it's no big deal, but it does mean that person traveling back and forth from one of those countries is going to get a few more questions. Right. Some people have suggested, John, that, well, maybe we should have given everyone a 3-day warning. Well, that would just mean that a terrorist would just move up their travel plans by 3 days.
Well, I mean, what are you going to say there? This guy ran on these promises. The promises were not popular with the left. The left tended to treat them like they were just more political promises. They didn't mean anything.
I think.
And now you see that there is an application of the promises, and now you see that there is an application, a policy, and people are going crazy. And here's the problem. The left has damaged itself before this and during this election and after this election. The left had damaged itself before that they've lost credibility. the media wing of the left, the mainstream media, which also includes, I would think, Hollywood, has damaged itself. It's just, it's committing intellectual suicide. As people begin to more and more and more connect the mainstream media with in the news, especially these so-called news organizations, with lying, with exaggerations, with hypocrisy, with claiming other people are doing things when they're the ones who are doing it, like fake news, supposedly in the name of saving the republic. People are not going to pay any attention anymore, and I'm afraid that has already started. And there's really, it's been pointed out by others, it's really no way for the left to stop the hemorrhaging, because they took the one thing that they had absolutely necessary for the news, and that's credibility, truth telling, and they flushed it down the toilet to try to kill Trump. But they had already done that to try to kill Bush. George W. Bush, whatever his middle initial is. They had already spent years lying about him. I'm not saying he was a great president, but everybody remembers the way they jumped on that guy after supporting the war, and everything became about Bush so bad that when Obama spent 4 years blaming everything on Bush, it didn't seem unusual. Anyway, we'll take a break here and have this week for you, Ray Charles, Country. His Country period, the modern sounds of country by Ray Charles. And this is a classic right here. We'll be right back. 618 Kelly O'Connell. A little chilly out there. And I'll have the temperature when we come back. And
I've made up my mind to live in memory of the lonesome time. I can't stop wanting you. It's useless to say.
All right. There's another element of this order, these orders that were put out. I mean, it was just really kind of hard to keep up with the all the stuff that was going on last week. But it's just this is absolutely hilarious. In the face of tiny number of refugees coming over to America that are Christian, the president has turned that around and has decided that we're going to bring in more Christians. We're going to prioritize Christians. Now, supposedly, Christian leaders are criticizing this, and I would use this as a prima facie example of the extraordinary and terrible impact of political correctness on the culture, including Christianity, the church, or Christian leaders itself. It'd be, you know, it's what, like that lady, I played that clip for you the other day, the lady who was a Christian who was criticizing feminism and at the same time saying we're pretty much all feminists in this culture because we're marinated in it. So we're marinated in political correctness. And so you get these crazy, crazy things coming out of the church. They have, in effect, brought no Christians over from the Middle East, no measurable number of Christians over from the Middle East since the Syrian war started. Now, the fact that some Christian leaders would get up and criticize that, because in political correctness you cannot favor one religion over another, doesn't surprise me in the least, but it's kind of a sad commentary. Your own people are getting killed because of what they believe, which is the same thing that you believe, and the government proposes to change that and start bringing more of men, and you get up and criticize that. A suicide movement that is found in liberalism, far leftism, political correctness is an expression of it, and the suicide movement is then adopted by the church, because when the church is not leading in the culture, the church is following, and it's a very ugly thing. And that's really what we're in the midst of now, is the church is following the rest of the culture, adopting one unbiblical principle after another. Church leaders speak out against Donald Trump's decision to prioritize evangelical refugees as the president confirms his plan in an interview with a Christian broadcasting network. And, you know, I thought it was one of the saddest things that I had ever seen, that the president, Obama, who claimed to be a Christian, and it's obviously something that everybody thought was a pretty good joke after a while. I didn't seem to have any interest in Christianity for 8 years whatsoever. Didn't go to church when any religion came up. The religion that he would praise would be Islam. Supported all kinds of policies that were outside of the Bible's worldview. And president of World Relief says that's an accident, not bringing in more Christians. Scott Arbiter, who obviously thinks he's the arbiter of the faith, says that there's no connection between what Obama believed in the policy and not bringing in these people. So I've got a little clip here from the Donald's interaction, but you've got another Christian leader, so-called Christian leader, Bishop Joe Vasquez of the Catholic Church. We believe in assisting all regardless of their religious beliefs. And Jen Smyers, right, the Associate Director for Immigration and Refugee Policy of Church World Services, said the day the immigration ban was signed, it was a shameful one. So you've got these religious, you know, these so-called Christian leaders standing up and putting just another nail in the coffin of the church. you know? And I mean, historically, and this is out of the Bible, Christians were supposed to go and especially give aid to other Christians under the theory, from what I understand, is that number one, it's the true faith, but number two, Christians are in more in peril than any other group, which has proved to be true in the Middle East. And so despite the fact that we come out of a Christian worldview and all of the rights and privileges that we have worked out of these group of people one way or the other, the church, Christian philosophers, et cetera, and Islam did not add the tiniest speck to the theory of rights. I can tell you that from having studied it. We're still going to move heaven and earth to bring in more Muslims. That's just crazy. Here we go. A conversation on CBN, Christian Broadcast Network, with the president. And here we go.
Christians, we've talked about this overseas. Right. The refugee program that, or the refugee changes you're looking to make, as it relates to persecuted Christians, do you see them as kind of a priority here? As
yes.
You do?
Yes, they've been horribly treated. Do you know, if you were a Christian in Syria, it was impossible, very, very, at least very, very tough to get into the United States. If you were a Muslim, you could come in. But if you were a Christian, it was almost impossible. And the reason that was so unfair is that everybody was persecuted, in all fairness, but they were chopping off the heads of everybody, but more so the Christians. And I thought it was very, very unfair. So we are going to help them.
So 5% of these Syrian people are Christians, but virtually none of the people that were brought over from Syria or any other part of the Middle East were Christians. Maybe it was 1%, maybe it was 0.5%. The vast majority were Muslims, and so people are so caught up in their myths that they don't even notice. But these individuals that are stand up and fighting for Islam, well, let me tell you something. Islam is not standing up and fighting for you. They're waiting for their chance to come in and dominate. And part of the domination is, if you don't believe, then if you don't believe in Islam, you know what happens. 631 Kelly O'Connell AM Las Cruces AM 1450 523 1450. And we'll return in just a moment with John McCain's shameful statements. All right, so let me ask you this. There was virtually no, or just a tiny, tiny percent of these people coming from the Middle East who were Christian. The vast majority of people that were brought over from the Middle East were Muslim. So do you see a problem with that? No. I see a problem with it. 523-1450 if you disagree. This is a Christian country. What kind of a policy is said to be helpful or beneficial when it is bringing in large numbers of people who not only don't believe in the native faith but are totally opposed to it? How is that good public policy? This is another PC trap. Why did the president only bring in Muslims? Was he trying to convert America to Islam? Was he trying to make Christianity here weaker? Was he trying to create an open religious marketplace where nobody could really express themselves because for one group to express their ideas would antagonize the other? I mean, there had to be a reason, and from what we've seen from Obama, it had to be a bad one compared to what most people over here think. So the vast majority of people here are Christians. Isn't it common sense that the vast majority of refugees that you bring over should be Christian? I mean, that goes without saying, right? So why was it the opposite? And now when they're trying to amend that, why is there this firestorm? Well, here's part of it. Where Christian leaders stand on Trump's refugee policy, and this is from the Atlantic Monthly. And, you know, the news media so regularly salts lies into its reporting. You don't even blink an eye right now. So the statement that we're going to bring in more Christians, the response is the announcement, and this is from the Atlantic. The announcement was met with immediate backlash from leaders of nearly every Christian denomination. I mean, is that true, number one? I don't believe it. Along with those of other faiths. They argue that Trump's actions do not reflect the teachings of the Bible nor the traditions of the United States, and they have urged the president to let them go get back to work. Many of the country's most prominent refugee resettlement organizations are faith-based. So, all right, so here's actually a little bit kind of interesting commentary on this. If so many prominent Christian leaders reject the notion that their fellow Christians should get preferential treatment, why has this become Trump's policy? One possible answer is that these leaders don't necessarily reflect what their flocks believes. In other words, they're politicians who feel they have to present certain ideas or they're going to be criticized. Even if they think an open refugee policy is in line with the teachings of Christianity, lay Americans don't necessarily feel the same way. All right, so it would be one thing if it was an open refugee policy, which we've seen on the southern border here, where anybody who shows up gets taken across and treated like a king or a queen. But that is not what's going on. What's going on is, for whatever reason, and I'm sure Obama will state that it's because of just luck or whatever his reason would be. It wouldn't be a good reason, in my opinion. We vastly favored Islam. Now, let's just be realistic here and say a tiny minority of those people are jihadists. How many people are going to die as a result of this policy, this Obama policy, where you've got to bring in a lot more Muslims? Now, I'm sure because of the way these globalists think that the way that they think, you've got to bring in as many Muslims as possible, because what you have to do is balance out the population of America to make it fair. Now, what needs to be more fair, you ask? Well, it's unfair that the United States has more freedom and liberty and stuff than other countries. It's not the Muslims' fault. They didn't choose where they were born. Therefore, we have to bring in as many Muslims as possible and also teach the people that live here that Muslims are good people, right? I mean, it would be something along those lines. And it is a stupid public policy to radically favor Islamic refugees in this country. Am I stating that we need to stop Muslims from coming in here? No, but there was absolutely no excuse for the president doing what he did. It was just, it was idiotic, and it was also harmful to America. But basically, everything that Obama did, people became immune to Obama making bad decisions because he had a big smile on his face. Maybe because he never admitted he was wrong and never apologized for anything. Maybe because they felt guilty because he was black and we used to, the country used to own slaves. For whatever reason, he was a terrible, terrible. All of these executive orders are meant to push back on some terrible decision that Obama made, right? I mean, would we be doing this if Obama had been more reasonable in the percentage of religious? So the criticism here ought to be against Obama, not Trump. Trump is just trying to reset things. Now, here's another part of this article. Christ calls for us to care for everyone, regardless of who they are and where they come from. That has to be a core part of our witness, not just caring for our own, but caring for others as well. I mean, you could get into a debate over that. I mean, charity does begin in Jewish and Christian history, but this idea that there has to be this fact-blind interaction with all human beings, regardless of what they believe, and treatment of them as if religion itself didn't exist is contradictory. And I would challenge people to go to the Bible and prove that the Bible is willfully blind on what people believe. I mean, it says in many places in the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, make sure that you reach out and help those people of your faith. I mean, it would be ridiculous if it didn't say that. But modern Christianity in America has become politically correct. Political correctness is more important than the faith. And these people will put you and everybody else at risk just to prove a point. All right, we'll come back and talk about this a little bit more. Kelly O'Connell, 643, Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450, not to be redundant, AM Las Cruces. 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back.
So I'll just live my life in dreams of yesterday.
Dreams of yesterday.
Information on how you can legally reduce or eliminate your tax.
Hey, it's Kelly.
Hey, this is Scott.
Hey, it's Kelly. Who's this?
I've been listening to you. Can you hear me,
Kelly? Who's this? Please talk.
Yeah, I'm just calling. Just listen to what you were saying. And
hello.
The thing about charity, to me, is just simply this. Doesn't mean that they need to bring
you
into our
hold,
home.
Okay, I can't hear you.
Yeah,
can you
hear me?
Yeah, I had one of the buttons pushed. Who's this?
Okay, my name is Scott, and I just wanted to say I believe in charity and helping out anybody. I don't even if they're my enemy, but at the same point, I don't believe putting them around my family.
Right.
They could stay
yes.
over in Syria or wherever
Common
it is
sense.
That they're going to be.
Common sense, right?
I don't
right?
believe that we.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go for it.
Yeah. Hey, let's let me put you on hold for 1 minute, okay? And I'll bring you on the air.
Okay.
All right. Okay. All right, and we've got Scott here. Scott, you had a comment about the bringing in Muslim refugees.
Yeah, we can help people. We don't need to bring them to our home or to our country.
We've done lots. I've been in the military. I've went overseas. I've went over there to give out many things and helped out people a lot. It doesn't mean that they need to come to our home. And if they don't want to treat us with our constitution and so forth, why would we let them come to our country?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that Islam has no concept of a constitution other than the Quran. I guess they have a giant understanding of the constitution, if you understand it as the Quran and Sharia law, but you know, they don't believe in the rights of religious minorities. In their way of seeing things, they're doing a favor to be nice to anybody who doesn't believe in Islam, and that person doesn't have a right to do anything.
We've seen that over there. We've seen women being mistreated for being at it whatever it was. And I don't want to bring that to my home. If they want to have that, that's fine. But
when you
need to obey our rules.
When you say your home, do you mean America or in your neighborhood?
Either one, America or the neighborhood.
But what did you mean?
You know, I don't mind if they're going to, like I say, if they're going to believe in our constitution, sure. I mean, anybody that signs up to become an American citizen, they've got to swear that they're going to live by our American standards.
Yeah, but what if their religion includes an idea that they can lie to further their faith?
Well, and that's one of the big keys about the Islamic culture is for that to happen. And I guess that's where, you know, you kind of bring in Christ, you got to give him a chance. And
well, wait a second.
You
give people a chance, but that chance doesn't include, like you say, moving them into your house. This is a very, very ill-advised policy to bring in large numbers of these people and then hope that they adapt.
I agree with you 100% on this, because it's a touchy subject for me, and not a touchy subject, but something I truly believe is a problem for our culture, because if you can't really trust them, that's why I say if you know that you can get a trust out of them. When I was over there, we had some of the people that we worked with that they were really good for us, interpreters and certain things like that. But like you say, most of them you can't trust. And if you can't trust them, why would we allow them in?
Well, and I mean, here's the thing that has never been dealt with in this culture is there a difference between Islam and other religions? And more to the point, does Islam bless violence in a way that no other religion does? If so, then how can you possibly claim all religions are the same?
Yeah, that's true. I when I was in college, I had a professor. She was actually an English professor from India. And even this is before I'd come in the military. She said that Osama bin Laden was in Pakistan. And now Pakistan and India don't have the greatest of relations. And so I kind of thought, I just blew it off as, she doesn't like Pakistan, but ended up being the situation. And she says that the one difference between America and India is, I mean, there's several differences, but one of them, as far as us dealing with Islam extremists, is that we didn't put up with it. It's over there, bombings and people getting shot, stabbed, wasn't that out of the ordinary. They didn't really, not that they didn't value life, but it was just like, oh, there's another terrorist attack, whatever.
But they don't value life the way that we do. We're the ones who came up with the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and the idea that, you know, it was in the West and especially in Britain and America where we decided we were going to settle our political differences through public balloting, through public expressions, and then we would settle the issues privately at the ballot box, and also religion. We were not going to fight over religion. We worked that out. These people have never, and I would guess, are never going to buy into that model.
No, it's funny. When I was in Afghanistan, you had all these little tribes, and not every one of them got along. And I think that's one thing about America. It doesn't matter where you come from. We have almost, I would say, we're the melting pot of the world. We have probably every culture, every race, and we still get along for the most part. I mean, we have, there's several minor differences, but we work through them to make our country great. And that's what makes America great to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, I got to go. I got some stuff to take care of, but great call. Thank you. All right, folks. All right, so let me get some weather here for you. Our weather person is out, and we did have somebody leave the corporation. Vanessa used to do the local news and the weather, so she's gone. And what we've got here is 29 degrees right now, a high today of 60, and tonight will be 30. Tomorrow, 64, full of sunshine. So looks like it's going to be some pretty good weather. Now, there is some other weather information, weather news, if you will, out there that I picked up last night. So if I can find it here. Well, maybe I'll do it next hour because I think we need a little comedy break here. Here's Orny Adams on Fat Kids.
Apparently that's one of the perks, but then you're stuck with one of these little kids we have nowadays. These fat, lazy, they're fat, lazy, little entitled, fat, lazy, slutty, fat. They're lazy. Their backpacks have wheels. I was at a high school. They look like thousands of miniature flight attendants just wheeling their books around. Might as well give them the moving sidewalk. I don't want them to pull a muscle or something. I don't mean to make fun of the fat kids, but if you're 8 years old and you're a boy, you shouldn't be a C cup. That's all I'm saying. It's an epidemic. Everyone goes, what's the solution? What can we do about it? Stop feeding the fat kids. Stop. Just stop. If you see a fat kid eating and it's not your kid, just knock the chicken nugget right out of their mouth. Just knock it out. Just knock it. Make it look like an accident. Just, sorry. Then stuff the nugget out like a cigarette. Bad, fatty, bad. These kids have it too easy. When I was a kid, nothing had wheels. Cars didn't have wheels. I used to hate taking out the trash. Remember those old, dented, metal trash? They were weapons. They were weapons. They were cracked and rusty, and you drag them down the driveway, and they jump up all over the place, and they hit you in the leg and cut you, and sour milk would seep into your wound and cause Ebola. Now the little kids have plastic cans with wheels, and their sneakers have wheels, and they just roll down the driveway.
Orny Adams. All right, here's a little national weather for you. We got another storm, a major storm coming in of all places to the Pacific Northwest and from San Francisco up, which will in some places dump 5 inches of rain, believe it or not. Here we go. Weather Channel.
Well, here is a look back to mid-January in Portland, Oregon, where, of course, we saw huge impacts with snow and ice. And Portland is one of the cities that could see additional rounds of snowfall as another system swings in and keeps things unsettled midweek. So talking Wednesday through Friday. Now let's also focus in on the additional snowfall, which is expected across the Cascades as well as the Sierra. We're talking mostly rain at the lower elevations, but as we focus in again on what shapes up Wednesday going into Thursday, this is where we really see the biggest impacts for locations like California as well as across Oregon. And then we see that expansion of the snowfall again, going more so into the northern Rockies towards the end of the week. So rain at the coast, definitely going to be very, very windy, and certainly the interior locations picking up on that high elevation snowfall with some possible icing for select spots. Again, this is what we're looking at going through the end of the week. You can see the heaviest spots shaded in the pinks and purples.
And a whole lot of needless to say, a whole lot of snow for the Sierra Nevadas. And there was an article that I found that, and hold on a second here. Here's another storm out west, a different explanation. This is going to hit us too.
Meteorologist Reynolds Wolf, and one story that we're following, one of many, it's what's taking place out to the west. Yeah, we've got another storm that's going to be heading its way through. A large disturbance that's going to track east, that big ridge, the big blocker out towards the west, that's going to be gone. And that's going to open the door for more of the moisture. What a gangbuster it has been in terms of the moisture flow that's going to continue to sweep across the state. This is wonderful news for California. We don't want the flooding. We don't want mudslides. We want the moisture, though. We need the precipitation. We're going to have a different nature of it, though, when you get back into the central and northern Rockies, where it's mainly going to be snow showers. The first installment for California, though, primarily it's going to be rain and wind. By the time we get into Wednesday and Thursday, we see more of those showers begin to move from the San Joaquin, Northern California, Central California, too. And then from Thursday into Friday, again, more of the expansive snowfall for the Central Rockies. Friday brings a promise of more snow to the Sierra, into the Cascades. And I'll tell you, even Missoula will get a dosage of snowfall. Highest hitters in terms of the snow, highest points in the Sierra, and back in the Central, Northern Rockies. Beautiful, beautiful snow. And that rain, well, it's good to see that too. For more on this story, keep watching the weather.
And one last little clip here on 8 feet of snow in 5 days in the Sierra Nevadas.
In California, you know pretty darn well that it's been extremely snowy so far this year. Of course, this is all very good news for the drought in the long run. Skiers have been very happy, I'm sure. But, you know, in the short term, the snow causes a lot of issues. The roads get really messy, have a lot of accidents. And, you know, the rain that's come along with a lot of these storms has caused some flooding as well. Look at all these winter storms that we've had so far this year. The last six in particular, the ones in blue there, those are the ones that have come directly into California over the last couple of weeks. So as you might imagine, we have really amassed quite a bit of snow. We've had over 11 feet of snow in Tahoe City, over 20 feet of snow in Mammoth Mountain, and Squaw Valley more than 8 feet. So let me give you an idea of where we stand with the drought right now.
All right, so the drought is the exceptional drought is over. Extreme drought is going away, and they think by the start of spring, all of the drought might be over. And we'll take you out here with a little Ray Charles, 523-1450 to call in. We'll come back and talk about these executive orders and the panic and pandemonium it's caused in the left. We'll be back after a break on the hour. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces.
Happy hours that we once knew, though long ago, it still made me blue. They say that time heals a broken heart, but time has to steal since we've been apart.
We have got a situation right now that the leadership of some states and cities and certainly the mainstream media is furious and absolutely besides itself when 100 people coming in and I'm trying to remember what Priebus said, 320 out of 320,000 entries in the United States a day, 109 were kept aside for extra checking, and yet this has caused a fury that is just extraordinary, and they've termed it a constitutional crisis. Well, CNN has said that, but then again, CNN is kind of a living constitutional crisis, and you've got this claim that it is illegal to stop these people coming in from another country because it is a Muslim ban, although the words were not used. So the interesting thing about this is that they used a list, and this is one of the most brilliant things about what Trump is doing right now with these executive orders, is that he is using the decisions and the, even the wording of previous administrations to support his decisions as executive orders. So not just pushing back against previous administrations, but even using decisions and law statements by past administrations, using these to create new law or new rules, and it's kind of brilliant the way he's doing it. Whether you agree with whether you think it's the actual decision is stupid, the way he's going about it is a kind of a brilliant approach. Now John McCain gets up and, being the apologist that he is, you know, was this guy ever really I don't remember a time when McCain was really a conservative. He's always been in the pocket of the media or trying to get support from the people in the media, which is just to support leftism. And so anyway, this decision is made, and then there's a judge who addresses the immigration ban, but there's a strong, I think, sense out there that the court system may not be able to set this aside because it's within the powers of the president. And nobody had a problem when Obama was doing things like this. You know, Obama was doing this thing where he was letting everybody in. Where was the outrage? Where was the consternation in the media, bearing in mind what a dangerous idea it is to let anybody who just shows up into the country? Isn't that sad that the media doesn't really seem to have any concern or care or commitment to the American people, but they want to live here as Americans, and they want to be seen as great people? All right, here is from this Canadian attack. In the midst of this is proof that we need to be careful with these people, because it is the one religion that I'm aware of that puts violence first, or at least puts it on the top tier of reactions. Here's ABC Action News. Canada Prime Minister mosque attack in Quebec City that killed 6 is terrorism.
Suspects are in custody, and Prime Minister Justin Trudeau called the shooting a terrorist attack on Muslims. In addition to the 6 killed, 8 others were hurt. Quebec City has several events planned for today to demonstrate solidarity with the Muslim community.
The attack came only a day after Trudeau promised that Canada would welcome refugees temporarily banned by the United States.
We have to keep working together, striving towards an open, inclusive, peaceful society. That's the right response to this type of terrible event.
The New York City Police Department said it is beefing up patrols of mosques and other houses of worship within its city in response to the attack.
So the people who did the shooting is not mentioned here, but were screaming Allahu Akbar. So is it terrorism against Islam, or is it terrorism within Islam? And here's Rupley TV. And I think this is just live recordings there, but here is from USA News.
In CNN. Quebec, and police say 6 people were killed in that mosque attack. We also know that 8 were injured. Now, again, this is still information that's coming out in a news conference, so it's unclear if that number will go up, but that is what we have been able to confirm just within the last few minutes. We know that mosque attack happened last night in Quebec City at the Quebec Islamic Cultural Center, and we know then that police said that they made one arrest and that the situation was under control and that the mosque had been evacuated, but that's all that they would say about the investigation. Now, I heard your report earlier with Paula, and she said that witnesses were saying that there were two gunmen. She was saying that witnesses also reported seeing two gunmen wearing black clothing. Of course, again, this investigation very early, so that's all information that's still being gathered from the witnesses that were there. But again, I do want to repeat again, authorities saying in a news conference, six people.
All right, we get it. Six people shot. If there was somebody screaming Allahu Akbar, and if the people appeared to be from the Middle East, would the media report it if they could get away with keeping the information to themselves? I mean, it goes against their narrative. All right, here's a little more on the refugee block, and this is from Fox News.
Chaos overnight in New York City. This is JFK Airport. There are cities, Los Angeles, down in Dallas. Here's Los Angeles. Take a look at that. A lot of people coming out to protest this this ban on refugees from entering the United States. And, of course, the news overnight that a judge has at least stayed a portion of this, which would allow people with visas to not then be sent back, but to remain sort of indefinitely, I guess, at the airport while they're examining them.
Yeah, as you can see that play out there. We now want to bring in Boris Epstein, a special assistant to the president, a White House assistant communications director. Boris, good to see you this morning.
Good to see you, Abby. How's everybody?
Good. So as you can see, there is a lot going on this morning, a lot of news. People are waking up this morning trying to digest what's going on, trying to figure out how they feel about things. Off the top, I want to give you that chance to sort of, is there anything you feel like needs to be said this morning as you are coming, you know, in front of the White House there? Is there anything you feel that you need to explain, help people understand?
Well, here's the bottom line. The bottom line is that we need to be safe in this country. And this president, President Trump, ran on the fact that this country needs to be secure and safe. America deserves that as a basic right. And this executive order goes a long way toward that. What the executive order does is it ensures that the current laws on the books are followed. The list of countries is actually the list put together by the Obama administration in 2015, expanded in 2016. As far as the court order, it actually has no bearing on the executive order whatsoever. Because per the executive order, those folks in transit were ready to be screened here in the United States if they have proper documentation and allowed into the United States, unless, of course, they pose a security threat, which has always been the law, that if someone is coming in and they pose a security threat, they're not allowed into our country.
Clear up, Boris, clear up for us this green card issue. Seems to be a lot of confusion this morning about what this does for those carrying green cards.
Those with green cards, if they are overseas in those seven countries, again, this is limited to seven countries, then they are able to come back if they pass through a rescreening, again, to make sure that they are not posing a security threat. So the countries we're talking about, Iraq, Yemen, Somalia, four others, those are the countries. If you are in those with a U.S. green card and you want to come back, you have to pass through a rescreening. And that, again, is geared toward making sure America and Americans are safe.
But, so a rescreening, though, yeah, that if they find that nothing is to be worried about, they can then get through.
That's correct, as long as they don't pose a security threat.
Okay, it's just important for people to understand because there are a lot of reports out there right now, and you watch these protests playing out, Boris, and you watch the mainstream media, and a lot of people are up in arms. They're worried that their country is being taken away from them in some sense. So I just think it's important for people to get a better understanding of exactly what the White House is putting in place.
Of course. The key here is that the White House is enforcing the laws already in the books, the regulations on the books, and doing so well within the Constitution. We are making sure that this country continues to be secure. You know, certain folks who come in this country through some of these visa programs have already tried to hurt our country and have done so. Look at San Bernardino. There was a planned terrorist attack in Kentucky. Of course, look at 9/11. So we are doing everything we can with this administration to ensure safety and security, but within the current regulations, laws, and the Constitution. That's
why not Afghanistan then? There are some other countries you talk about, San Bernardino. You look at the Orlando terror attack, or right here in New York City and Chelsea, where you can link that back to Afghanistan. That's not on the list. Pakistan's not on the list. Neither is Saudi Arabia. Is that something that the White House is maybe thinking about, or why were they left off?
Well, the list is not a finite list. It's not a finished list. But what this list represents are the countries designated by the Obama administration as having severe security threats in terms of traveling to those countries.
But, Boris, let me challenge you a little bit on that.
It does not.
The Trump administration doesn't care what the Obama administration thought. Clearly, they've changed course on just about everything that the Obama administration. So who cares that the list came from the Obama administration? Donald Trump, during the campaign, slammed Jeb Bush and the Bush family for its relationship with Saudi Arabia and went after saying the terror ties to Saudi Arabia in this country in 9/11, and he watched his friend die.
Well, you could use your own imagination. I mean, the idea that Trump doesn't care what Obama thinks is, I'm sure it's true and false. If he can use something that Obama did or said to give backing to his decision making, and then it makes it that much harder, maybe even impossible to fight back against. So I think that that Trump is trying to break down the resistance of the elite left and trying to get them in line with common sense decision making. If it wasn't for this just like free range entry into the United States through the southern border and through the immigration process, Syrians, people coming in from Syria, we have no idea who they are because they don't have any paperwork. If it wasn't for that, then this would seem like a normal immigration issue. And yet the left is throwing itself down like an infant and kicking its heels and screaming and crying. And how many months or years are they going to do this? Every single thing, every decision by Trump is going to be a constitutional crisis. That makes no sense. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. We'll be back. So we've got this situation going on, and here's just a little bit more to cap this. I mean, I honestly find this boring to listen to because it's within the law. You know, there was no outrage when Obama was doing things that were clearly unconstitutional, so the left doesn't care about the Constitution until it agrees with how they see things. But here's a little more from CNN. Very entertaining stuff here, I must say.
Trump defending his controversial travel ban, even as attorneys general from 16 states slam it as, quote, unconstitutional, un-American, and unlawful. Protesters gathering in cities across the United States, from New York to Boston, Los Angeles, and beyond, all in response to the order that effectively bans 218 million people from seven Muslim-majority states, Muslim-majority nations. Now, a U.S. citizen from Yemen says that his brother's wife and seven children were detained at an airport in Pittsburgh.
They placed them in isolation in a small room and treated them as criminals or as people who may have committed a crime. They have a 6 years old and a 7 years old.
Who cares? Go back to your own country then if you don't like to be treated like that.
Humanity.
Now, the president issuing a statement that defends the ban. It says, quote, we will continue to show compassion to those fleeing oppression, but we will do so while protecting our own citizens and border. To be clear, this is not a Muslim ban, as the media is falsely reporting. This is not about religion. This is about terror and keeping our country safe.
So, I mean, one of the things that this is helpful to do is to communicate to other countries, you don't have the right to come here. And if you picked up the idea that you did from the last president, it's false. You don't have the right to live here. And, you know, did you hear the sense of entitlement with the guy's voice? They put my family in a small room. Where were they supposed to put your family? In the, you know, United Airlines cocktail lounge, which, of course, would be offensive since you're Muslim. You don't want to be around alcohol, but. But, you know, this is absolutely ridiculous that we've created this problem where America owes everything to the world, but we can't even do things that are obviously designed to defend ourselves. And, you know, I when I first heard about this ban, I thought they were sending – I thought he was putting in this Muslim rule – and sending all these people back to their home countries, and all he's doing is putting an extra level of checking into these, you know, it's just, so you can't take the media's word for anything. In the meantime, you've got this shootout at this mosque in Quebec, which just goes to show you in Canada, is so dumb that they're at the same time the shootout is going on is saying, bring all, you know, if you can't go to America, come here. There's one religion out there that regularly around the world kills people in the name of God. So do we not have a right? If these people, this same religious group wants to move here, you're telling me we don't even have the right to put an extra level of scrutiny on them? That's sad. That means that for many people in the United States, you've lost the ability to use common sense or to understand what your rights are as Americans, or to see and accept how to defend yourselves. It's sad. We've been raped and pillaged by the last president. 726 in Las Cruces, Sam 1450, 523 1450. We'll be right back. Got some local news for you.
So I'll just live my life to dreams of yesterday.
Friends.
I can't argue with that. We can help you with that TV problem, though, by helping you with that TV. Your mobile is back. It's coming up next.
All right, so, you know, we've got this situation going on, but of course, as with Trump, always with Trump, there's more going on, and you don't know if he's doing stuff because that's the first order of business or if he's just trying to distract people. Either way, it's entertaining, kids. This is, you know, it's so funny to see these leftists who have just absolutely abused the vast majority of Americans and denied them their rights. Harry Reid killed hundreds or thousands of bills that came into the Senate. He personally decided that he didn't want them to hear it, so he just denied them the hearing. And but these are the same people that are the most outraged, angry. The fury is unrelenting, and here is Charles Schumer tearing up. Poor baby. Check this out. Charles Schumer, head of the Senate minority.
Executive order. Was mean-spirited and un-American. It was implemented in a way that created chaos and confusion across the country, and it will only serve to embolden and inspire those around the globe who will do us harm. It must be reversed immediately. Senate Democrats are going to introduce legislation to overturn this and move it as quickly as we can. And I, as your senator from New York, will claw, scrap, and fight with every fiber of my being until these orders are overturned.
Right. you guys ran everything into the ground, but it's time to have you make the decisions again. Okay. Now we've got a Supreme Court nominee that is coming up here. And, here is, I think I've got a little recording of this, but, well, I did. What's her face? Katie Couric. I had her blabbing about this, but I don't see that clip right now. Anyway, here is a little more from Trump's last week.
Very good. Thank you. Sometime next week, I'll be making my decision. This week, we'll be announcing. Next week, we have outstanding candidates, and we will pick a truly great Supreme Court justice. But I'll be announcing sometime next week.
All right. So, announcing next week, this is the week, and so what do we know about this? And here's from Pence offering a hint on who it might be, and it's supposed to be announced tomorrow.
You'll move even faster when the president announces our nominee for the Supreme Court of the United States. And I know you all know about the list. And President Trump has been reviewing that list. And he has already indicated that he'll be making a decision and making an announcement next week. But I can already tip you off. President Trump is going to keep his promise to the American people, and he's going to nominate a strict constructionist to the Supreme Court in the tradition of the late and great Justice Antonin Scalia.
All right, so they're going to pick somebody who's very conservative, which only kind of goes without saying. And here's a little bit. Yeah, here's the Katie Couric clip.
Trump sticks to his plans. A nominee to fill the late Justice Antonin Scalia seat will be presented at any moment.
We have outstanding candidates, and we will pick a truly great Supreme Court justice.
During his campaign, Mr. Trump promised Republicans a rock-ribbed conservative justice.
I am looking to appoint judges very much in the mold of Justice Scalia.
Taking the unusual step of putting out a list of possible nominees before being elected.
I've actually picked 20 of them so that people would see. Highly respected, highly thought of, and actually very beautifully reviewed by just about everybody.
And all highly conservative. So what could go wrong? A lot. History reveals that the whole process is full of surprises. Presidents make surprise picks, like when President George Herbert Walker Bush picked a little-known New Hampshire judge, David Souter. He was expected to choose a well-established conservative. Instead, thanks to the influence of New Hampshireites close to Bush, he went with an obscure and reserved jurist, enigmatic on the big issues of the day. Bush's son also surprised by naming his own White House counsel, Harriet Myers, to succeed Sandra Day O'Connor on the court. Myers came under friendly fire. The president's right-wing base believed her record wasn't clearly conservative enough.
All right, so the history of the Supreme Court nominees from the Republican presidents has been the history of one disaster after another, with a few good choices salted in there. One of the good choices was Scalia. Another one was Alito. But you've got people like John Roberts, who's supposed to be a conservative, who gets up and gives his blessing to Obamacare. And think about the damage that Obamacare has done to America. And Roberts, I believe, was intimidated by the president, and the president had gotten up Obama being the, you know, kind of a anti-constitutional guy, got up and said that these are a group of unelected people. I think he was indicating to John Roberts that he was going to trash him. He was going to trash the Supreme Court, and he was going to release a firestorm against these people, but especially Roberts. And Roberts folded in the eye of the storm. And now he's just another middle of the road or even liberal jurist on there. It's pretty sad. So the people who win the presidency get a right to put their own picks in there. Those picks should reflect the beliefs, correct, of the president and of his party, and it hasn't worked out that way. So it's time to put in somebody there that is actually reflective of the broad values of America, Americans in general. 739 AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450. Just my opinion. Call up if you disagree. And here's a little Stephen Wright for you.
Call the wrong number today. I said, hello, is Joey there? And a woman answered. She said, yes, he is. I said, can I speak to him, please? She said, no, he can't talk right now. He's only 2 months old. I said, all right, I'll wait. One time right in the middle of a job interview, I took out a book and I started reading. The guy said, what the hell are you doing? I said, let me ask you one question. If you're in a vehicle and you were traveling at the speed of light, then you turned your lights on, would they do anything? He said, I don't know. I said, forget it then. I don't want to work for you.
Okay, so here is some... Here's another breaking story for you. Donald Trump wants to use I haven't been able to find the name of this thing, but it is, I don't know what the name of the program is, although it's been called a program. But the program is, and this is from the Chicago Tribune. The program is something that puts the feds in touch with the local police. And so what Trump wants to do, to quote the headline from the Chicago Tribune, is to enlist local police in immigration crackdown. And so he wants to revive this longstanding program that deputizes local officers to enforce federal immigration law. What do you think about that? The program has not received a lot of attention, but could have a big impact on this whole immigration situation. And this was started in, well, I don't know when it was started, but it mentions here that it had 60 police and sheriff's agencies given the special authority in 2009 of being involved in enforcing federal law on immigration. And Sheriff Joe Arpaio, or former Sheriff Joe Arpaio, used the program aggressively in Metro Phoenix. But Trump says he wants to empower local law enforcement to act as immigration officers and help with the investigation, apprehension, or detention of immigrants in the country illegally. And so there is, as most people know, a sharp divide over the issue. Now, the issue in general, although it doesn't cost a lot of money, I think it's $3,000 to get into it. But there is another story that is out there that I was going to ask you about before this big brouhaha broke open over the travel ban. And this is about this lady, and I'll tell you about her. Let's take a little break here. I'll tell you about her when we get back. But she is, they're thinking of trying to remove her from office. Well, here, let me play you a little clip from this right now. This lady has decided that she's not going to enforce. So it's kind of a sanctuary sheriff's office in Travis County, which is where Austin is, obviously the most liberal part of Texas. And nonetheless, she just got into office and she's just about to get kicked out from the look of it. And here is KXAN out of Texas.
The financial consequence, that is how Governor Greg Abbott responded today to the new Travis County Sheriff's stance on cooperation with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. KXAN's Brittany Glass spoke with county and state leaders weighing in on the sanctuary status debate.
It's a promise Travis County Sheriff Sally Hernandez campaigned on.
It is my policy to focus on local public safety priorities and leave it to federal immigration officials to focus on federal immigration enforcement.
A campaign promise Texas Governor Greg Abbott wants Hernandez to break. The governor is threatening to revoke nearly $2 million in state grants to Travis County if Sheriff Hernandez doesn't reverse course.
Money is critical.
Commissioner Gerald Doherty says it's a risk he's not willing to take.
I don't know where we're going to find $1.8 million and still be concerned about setting the tax rate.
State Senator Don Buckingham, who represents part of Travis County, says she supports the governor.
We feel like we need to secure the border and get rid of the lures such as sanctuary cities that bring people here.
Governor Abbott told KXAN last month, Texas needs to take things further this session, saying he's committed to signing a law banning sanctuary policies in our state.
We live in a nation that is a rule of law nation, and everybody, every governmental entity, every city, every campus is expected to follow the law.
But Travis County Sheriff Sally Hernandez says it's not law.
That the voluntary detainer requests from ICE are just that, voluntary. These requests are not orders from a judge, and they do not provide me with additional authority to hold someone.
Brittany Glass, KXAN News.
Commissioner Doherty says he has not spoken to the sheriff today about her plans. Commissioners should be able to ask her questions tomorrow at Commissioner's Court, but it's important to note Hernandez is an elected official, and she sets her own policies. We wanted to know more about the $1.8 million in funding Governor Abbott is threatening to cut off from Travis County. It comes in the form of 13 grants from the Texas Criminal Justice Division. Five of those grants went to juvenile probation programs in the county. The largest single grant, more than $250,000 for the county's adult probation DWI court. Another $234,000 went to a family violence victim outreach program. These grants make up just a small percentage of the county's overall budget. The county will spend just more than $1 billion this fiscal year. The sheriff's office makes up the largest portion of that budget.
And we do have a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
That's Chuck. I missed the first part of your program, first hour. So I don't know if you had any comments on the fact that our chief of police appears to be taking pretty much the same stand as this Travis County sheriff.
Which police chief, the county or the city?
Las Cruces.
What did he say?
He basically said that their interest is public safety, that they aren't going to act as enforcers of the immigration law for the feds, and that the immigrant, close quotes, population wouldn't cooperate with them if they thought they might be deported.
And what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, if they're here legally, they wouldn't get deported. Obviously, we're talking about people violating our immigration law, and the city apparently is taking up with them. We're going to be a sanctuary city, I guess.
And so, I'm looking at it right here. And so, let me take a little break and get back to that. Thanks for the heads up.
Okay, bye.
Bye. All right, folks. So what do you think about county commissioners or, you know, I think I played this. Didn't I play a clip from this guy? Maybe I'm confusing him with the Santa Fe mayor, but it seems like, so anyway, what do you think in general about public officials in the United States saying that Sheriff Montoya in Austin, that's a request. It's not law. It's not a judge's rule. What do you think about them saying stuff like that? What do you think about your local sheriff saying, we're not going to worry about the feds. We're just going to worry about local law. Do you support that? 751 AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm looking at this article that came out 3 days ago that I didn't see. Las Cruces Police Department Chief Jaime Montoya, my department will focus on local laws, not federal immigration laws. And Las Cruces Police issued a statement last Friday stating department focuses local law enforcement, not federal immigration laws. And this is after Trump has made his announcement. And Montoya says, our primary purpose is protecting the residents of Las Cruces by enforcing local laws. If an undocumented foreign national is arrested and jailed in Las Cruces, LCPD will notify the appropriate federal agency, but our officers don't seek out people here in violation of federal immigration law. Well, I mean, that's kind of a contradiction. Well, it seems like kind of a contradiction. If he finds out, all right, so they're not going to ask. And the police said officers are not authorized to detain or arrest anyone solely on the basis of nationality. And on its Facebook post, the LCPD said the enforcement of federal immigration laws and the arrest of undocumented foreign nationals resides exclusively with the federal government. And they also mentioned Trump on their Facebook. So maybe LCPD Chief Montoya is politicized by this issue. And he says, but Montoya says he doesn't want the immigration community to keep from calling police for fear of deportation. County Commissioner Rawson is very concerned about this and says it makes us a sanctuary city. County Manager Julia Downchan Brown disagrees and says the county government doesn't have the authority to prosecute anyone for violating federal immigration laws. That is an ignorant statement, in my opinion, because that's not the issue. So she either doesn't understand the issue or she's obfuscating. But anyway, this is LCPD general orders regarding foreign nationals in the U.S. include commissioned employees shall not inquire about or seek proof of a person's nationality, immigration status, unless there is the person in custody is in custody or is a suspect in an investigation for a non-immigration criminal violation. Commission employees may call federal immigration officials to the scene of a detention or investigation when the immigration status of an individual is discovered through the self-disclosure. All right, so the only way to find out is if people volunteer it. And we have one last call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Well, we have a problem with red light, people running red lights. When they issue traffic tickets to the Border Patrol, maybe I would support what you're talking about.
What do you mean?
And don't get me wrong. I support.
What do you
I'm
mean?
Conservative, and I support Trump.
What do you mean red lights, though? We're just about out of time, but could you? I'm not following you.
Well, each agency has its job. The police department to enforce local laws. The Border Patrol, they got their job to do. So you're asking one outfit to do the work of another.
I'm just reporting on this, but Trump is asking them to get involved with this it's an old network that he wants to reinvigorate. I got to go. Anything else?
No.
Thank you. All right. Well, you know, it's not an easy question to answer, but 7:59. Maybe we can chat about it tomorrow. Have a great day, Kelly O'Connell. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Ciao. See you in 22 hours.
I said I made up my mind to live in memory of the lonesome time.
Sing this song, children.